Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. On the show today, we get to travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur. Reggie Rivers is a safari guide who goes after the really big game.
Just how big are you talking?
Really big. Also, we have two stories from the best of your stories. One is about a dorm room ghost, and the other tells about creepy midnight callers. Of course, we have to start somewhere, and why not do that with a five-minute mystery?
Another five-minute mystery.
This five-minute mystery is being brought to you by The Silent Witness or Really Bad Alibis. If you believe the first, then the second is sure to follow, or vice versa. I personally like to have my witnesses be alive and my alibis to be sound. Now, this will all make sense later.
Is Tom Jackson?
Yes, who's this?
Keep this under your hat, Jackson, and you'll have a front page story.
What is this, a gag?
You won't think so when I tell you this is Rocky Stebbins.
Well, and where have you been hiding out? You know the whole police force is looking for you?
Yeah, I know.
Did you pull off that job at the bank and kill that guard?
That's what I want to see you about. I had nothing to do with it. And I want your paper to print this story. Can I come up and see you?
Sure. What have I got to lose except my job?
Anyone see you come in here, Stebbins?
Not a soul. I even doubled back to make sure. Now, you're a square guy, Jackson, and I'm telling you the facts. I got an alibi.
Yeah, let's hear your dream.
The bank job was pulled off at 2 o'clock, see? At that time, I'm someplace else.
Any witnesses?
I got a silent witness.
Yeah, who?
It ain't a who, it's a what. I saw the explosion and the fire at the United Oil Company tanks this afternoon.
Yeah, where were you when they blew up?
I was up on top of Lookout Mountain when I saw the whole thing happen.
What was the exact time the explosions began?
It was 2:15. You know, I couldn't get from the bank to the mountain in 15 minutes.
Yeah, not very well. More than 10 miles to the foot of the mountain, and then that walk uphill takes a good half hour.
And how?
But why would I believe that you were on top of that mountain when the United States tanks blew up?
I can give you an eyewitness description.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, it was such a swell day that I decided to spend the afternoon on the mountain looking out at the sights.
Cut it out, Rocky. Get to the explosion.
Okay. Well, I'm looking south, see, away from the tanks at the time it happens. All of a sudden, I start hearing some blasting. I turn around quick to the tanks, and some more explosions is tearing the air apart. But I don't see nothing. After one more blast, I suddenly see flames and smoke start pouring up from the tanks. Then some more explosions, then some more fire. It was the most horrible thing I ever seen in my whole life. My ears was coming off.
Yeah, so are mine right now.
Huh? What do you mean?
Simply that your alibi is the biggest cock and bull story I've heard in a long time. Now stay where you are, Rocky. I'm calling the police.
What mistake did Rocky Stebbins make in the telling of his alibi? In just a moment, we'll know. But first...
What the heck? It sounded good, but something is very wrong here. Why not just pay someone to be your alibi rather than try to convince someone that you saw a bomb blast? Now, having said that, telling someone you saw something is not an alibi, which probably means our criminal is an idiot. But hey, being an idiot is not a crime.
And now, back to our mystery.
You were doing fine until you hit the climax of your story. Then it fell apart completely. You forgot one little fact that every schoolboy learns. The scientific law that light travels faster than sound.
So what?
So you said that first you heard the explosions and then you saw the fire. Which, my friend, is an impossibility. Light goes at the speed of 186,000 miles per second, while sound only travels 700 miles per hour. The fire would have been seen first and the explosions heard a few seconds later.
A guy ain't got a chance. If it ain't one kind of law, it's another.
Okay, another attempt to use science in a situation that calls for none of it. He's quite right, though. Light does travel faster than sound. However, the guy said it took several blasts before he saw it, which could simply mean that the blast was not visible from his location straight away. Still, it's a really bad alibi, and I think he probably should have stayed in hiding. So, what did we learn? Well, this mystery was brought to you by a really bad alibi.
What's that you say?
I received an email from Wilford Fuller, who lives in Westfur, Oregon. I had never heard of this town, so I did a little research. Westfur is a city in Lane County, Oregon. The population was 253 at the 2010 census. It is located about 35 miles east of Eugene in the Willamette National Forest. The name Westfur was first used for the community in July of 1923. The name came from the Western Lumber Company, which produced Douglas fir lumber, and they established Westfur as their company town. It sounds really nice, and I have to say I'm gonna come visit there sometime. Now for Wilford's email. Ron, I love the podcast and was told about it by my son who attends college in Eugene. I love the stories, and I have some good ones from my days as a lumberjack. I've seen Bigfoot, been chased by a pack of wolves, had to sleep overnight in a beaver hutch, and met my wife while lost in a cave. If any of these stories interest you, I would be happy to share them. Wilford. Oh, Wilford, do I want to hear your stories. And I'm just guessing that your fellow listeners feel the same. Just reading your email sent chills through me in anticipation. So please do send me your contact information and let's get them into the coffers. Now, speaking of coffers, if you listened to the podcast last week, you know that we used a lot of stories during the month of Spooky 2019. So many, in fact, that the coffers are bare and I need your help to refill them. But just what is a coffer? It is a box or chest, especially one for valuables, a treasury, or governmental funds. In our case, I think the best definition is a treasury. After all, to me, nothing is more valuable than a well-told story. Normally, I get roughly 2 stories a week, sometimes more, sometimes less. During the month of Spooky, the number stayed about the same. However, the usage rate was off the charts. Hence my plea. I need your stories to rebuild those coffers. So, if you have a story, please share it with us. It can be about anything and everything. Do you have one that you want to share? I hope you do. And now, this word from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bronzeamazingstories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can definitely listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? Rivers of Time by L. Sprague DeCamp, narrated by James Adams. Reginald Rivers' safari business is struggling. That is, until the invention of the time machine. He quickly begins leading safaris back in time after the biggest game of all. But taking hunting expeditions back to the age of dinosaurs is very dangerous indeed. Now, this is a collection of 9 stories written by DeCamp. One of the stories in the book is called A Gun for a Dinosaur, and it was written in 1956 as a standalone story. We will actually hear the radio adaptation of that story later in the podcast. Do you like a good dinosaur story? Well, you can have all nine of these action-packed tales today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. Audible is offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get your free book today. Thank you, Audible. And now it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our first story was sent in to the comment section of the website with no name or location. I try to track these down, but in the end, it's up to me if I use it or not. As far as I can tell, the email doesn't exist either, or perhaps the person mistyped it. It was JJ S. Vent. So, JJ, if you want full credit for your story, please write me back and I'll mention your real name on an upcoming show. JJ writes, "Hello, Ron. I teach fifth grade and use your podcast in class from time to time. The kids love the stories, and I love your show. Please keep them coming. For this year's talent show, a group of kids are going to make their very own five-minute mystery. As you say, how about that? I have a creepy story that happened to me when I was in college. I hope you read it on the show. I think it'll send a chill or two. I was a four-year campus rat at my college. Dorm life was made for me, and I made use of every minute of it. Oh, and yes, I got an education. There was one room that everyone told stories about. People called it Julie's place. Julie was a student that had early onset cerebral palsy. She wanted to live her life as normally as she could for as long as she could. She was able to live on campus for 1 year before she started needing care. She died very young from complications soon after leaving school. People who have had her room swear she's still there having a good time on campus. Most people try to avoid that room, but it was just my luck to get it my sophomore year. To say I have had experiences in that room is quite the understatement. I've always been sensitive, after a sort, and here is one of my stories. Julie must have been a fun girl because things are constantly on the move in this room. For example, one day my toothbrush would be in its case, and the next day my pen would be in that case, and I would take a toothbrush to class. My roommate swore she had nothing to do with it, and we both wrote it off to just another Julie event. One morning I was sleeping in, and I felt someone shaking me awake. I angrily told my roommate to stop. From across the room, I heard some colorful language, followed by the words, "I didn't say anything." But nothing compares to what happened just before Christmas break. My roommate had finished finals early and had already gone home. I had one more final before I could head home the next day. I was studying at the desk when, behind me, all of the books on the nightstand dropped off onto the floor. I turned and saw no reason for this to happen. I went over to investigate, and as I was cleaning up, the papers on my desk flew straight into the air and scattered all about. I turned just in time to see a dark shadow-like thing staring back at me. It was featureless, but I am sure to this day I saw a smile. It faded away and I was left there, standing, holding some of my books. I didn't move right away, but when I did, I ran out of the room and spent the night in a girlfriend's room. We went back the next morning and papers were all over the room. But my books, well, they were neatly stacked in the shape of a house of cards type thing. I cleaned up, packed up, took my test, and headed home. When I came back to school in January, I was scared and didn't want to go back into that dorm room again. But when I arrived, my roommate was home, and she said everything was quiet. We never had a problem for the rest of that year. My junior year? Well, I lived in an off-campus dorm. J.J. Vince from Parts Unknown. Well, JJ, that did send a chill or two. Thank you for your story, and if you need scripts for those five-minute mysteries, let me know. Oh, and when you do, please tell me who you really are. Thanks again, and tell the kids hi. This next story is not for the faint of heart. We've had stories like this one before, but somehow this one feels a bit different to me. It was sent in by Alexandria Becker. I was able to talk with Alex on the phone, and I could hear in her voice that this one is still haunting her to this day. I wrote the story that you are about to hear, firsthand from Alex herself. She and I have named it Midnight Callers. The whole thing felt like a dream. One Sunday night, I woke up to our dog, Randy, barking. He was on the bed where my husband and I were sleeping with our 2-year-old daughter. Randy was staring at the bedroom door like an unknown stranger was out there rummaging around. I thought he was just freaking out over a house noise. We had only had him for about 3 months, and he was still a puppy. Anything would set him off. Our roommate, a creak from the house settling, the awnings moving outside in the breeze. Too many things, too many times. So, I wasn't concerned. I decided the best bet would be to open the door and show him that nothing was out there. It sounds a bit silly, but it's what we do with our daughter when she gets scared. And I figured it should work with a puppy, too. I opened the door, and he raced out to the front door and stood there snarling. It was an angry, violent growl, one that I've never heard him make before. I walked over, opened the baby gate, blocking the doorway, planning to open the door and show Randy everything was okay. The second my hand reached for the deadbolt, Randy went wild. He started barking and jumping towards me. Then he suddenly changed his temper and began to whimper. As his mannerism changed, so did mine. I wasn't calm anymore. My heart was racing and sinking at the same time. I was being flooded with a mixture of fear and dread. I decided to look through the peephole. I can't explain why, but I did. Outside were two kids. One was just a bit shorter than me and looked younger. I was 21 at the time, and she looked to be about 16 or 17. She was slender and pale. Her hair was white, and she wore it with long, blunt bangs in front that covered most of her eyes. She wore jeans and an olive-thin colored hoodie. She held the hand of a little girl who looked to be about 3 or 4. She was dressed in the same style jeans, but wore a button-down ivory cardigan. The smaller one was looking at the floor shyly, but had the same shade of hair tied back in a ponytail. Under her free arm, she held a stuffed toy. Had it not been for the feeling of overwhelming dread and fear, I probably would have invited those children in right then and there, but something about them seemed off. I hadn't made any noise, but I hadn't quieted Randy either. Also, I hadn't turned on any lights, so those kids had no real way of knowing that I was even at the door. Nonetheless, the older one spoke. She had a voice that was mature, and she held her head tilted downward so I couldn't see her eyes. She said, "We have to use your phone." I stood there in fear. How did she know I was there? She raised her head to face me directly, and that was when I saw her eyes. There was a reason I couldn't see them through the bangs before. They were black, or midnight blue. Either way, they were otherworldly. She said, "Our mother is worried." As someone who has always been interested in creepy stories, I knew what she was the second that she looked at me through the door. I've never been one to believe in these things. As a skeptic, when it comes to the paranormal, I've written off many a ghost story from friends and family. I just didn't believe it. However, this time I couldn't rationalize my way out of this. I was standing with nothing but a thin wooden door between me and two black-eyed children. I didn't answer her. Slowly and silently, I backed away from the door, Randy still cowering at my ankles. I could hear her calling out, "Please, just let us in for a minute to use your phone." I took another step back, and with that step, the tone changed. At first, she seemed polite, but when I took that second step back, she became commanding, almost hostile. "We're not going to hurt you. If we wanted to do that, we would have broken in. May we please come in and use your phone?" Randy snarled at the door, and I inched backwards, though something inside me kept pulling me back towards the door. It wasn't so much a physical as it was a feeling that I needed to go back and help them. I got to the bedroom, covered up the window, locked the door, and sat in the dim light on the edge of the bed. I heard her call back to me once more, and then it was quiet. I didn't go back to sleep that night, and I haven't slept right since. I know from my readings about BEKs that they just can't come in without permission. I don't know if they've ever hurt anyone, but I still fear that I'll be the exception. When I awoke my husband, he said it was just a dream and told me to forget it. He did go and investigate, but found nothing. To this day, a lingering feeling of sadness, dread, is still with me. And when the house is silent at night, well, I think you can imagine how I feel about that. Alexandra Becker, Lexington, Kentucky. You're still feeling it. After hearing your story, I can still feel it. Alex told me that she's never fully told this story before, and getting it out seems to be helping her get over it. It's been 4 years now, and they still live in that same house. Randy still overreacts to everything, but they've had no more black-eyed kids at their front door. Thank you for sharing your story, Alex. If you want to share your story, then please do. All it takes is going to ronsamazingstories.com. Click on the contact tab or the story submission banner and fill in the blanks. We want to hear your story. We want to feel your story. And please consider doing it today. Our featured story comes from the golden age of radio. It is titled A Gun for Dinosaur, and it tells the tale of four men who travel into the distant past to hunt dinosaurs. It was written by L. Sprague de Camp and was first published in Galaxy Science Fiction magazine in March of 1956. What we will hear was first aired on X-1 later that same year.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight's story, A Gun for Dinosaur, by L. Sprague de Camp.
Just whiskey, please. No soda.
Ice, Mr. Rivers?
Good heavens, no. I have been in America for some time, but not that long.
Well, to a fine dinosaur head.
Well, now, just a moment, Mr. Seligman. I won't take you hunting late Mesozoic dinosaur.
Why not?
How much do you weigh, about 9 stone?
130 pounds.
Yeah, I thought so. It's not heavy enough.
But your advertisement. You said safaris arranged to any time
well,
period.
Well, I'll take you to any period in the Cenozoic. I'll get you a shot at any entelodont or even mammoth or mastodon. They have fine heads. But I'll jolly well not take you to the Jurassic or the Cretaceous. You're just too small.
But what's my weight got to do with it?
Look here, old boy. What did you think you were going to shoot those dinosaurs with?
Well, I...
Well, look over here in this case. That's my own gun, a Continental 600. That shoots a pair of Nitro Express cartridges the size of bananas. It's designed for knocking down elephant, not just wounding them, but knocking them base over apex.
Well, now, I've handled guns.
Oh? Look, I've been guiding hunting parties for over 20 years. But I've never known a man your size who could handle a 6-0-0. It knocks him over.
Well, people have killed elephant with lighter guns, even a 375.
Yes, but consider an elephant weighs, well, let's say from 4 to 6 tons. You're planning to shoot reptiles weighing 2 to 3 times as much as an elephant. Now, I tell you, Mr. Seligman, I won't take anybody hunting dinosaur who can't handle a 6-0-0. Look, let's pour another drink and I'll tell you why. You see, I went into the partnership with the Rajah about 5 years ago. I call him that because he's the hereditary monarch of Janpur. It means nothing, of course. We both wanted to do a bit of hunting again. And Africa's all played out. It's too civilized now. So when we heard of Professor Prohaska's time machine at Washington University, we caught the next plane to St. Louis. The foundation administering the machine had worked out an arrangement splitting the time between scientific parties and hunters who wanted to try their luck at prehistoric game. Hunters paid through the nose, of course, to support the project. Well, it was about our 5th safari that Courtney James showed up. He's what you chaps call a playboy, a big bloke, handsome in a way, florid, beginning to turn to fat. He was on his 4th wife. And when he showed up at the office with a blonde, I assumed that this was the 4th Mrs. James. And he left her in the outer office and corrected my assumption.
Bunny? Oh, no, she's not my wife. My wife is in Mexico, I think, getting a divorce. But Bunny here would like to go along.
I'm sorry. We don't take ladies. Not to the late Mesozoic.
If she wants to go, she'll go. She skis and flies my airplane, so why shouldn't
she... There are enough risks at 85 million B.C. without adding to them. I'm sorry, but it's against the firm's policy.
Now, look here. I'm paying you a lot of money. I'm entitled...
You can't hire me to do anything against my best judgment. Now, if that's how you feel, get another guide.
All right, all right. But let me tell you.
Oh, it ended with my telling him to get out of the office or I'd throw him out. And I was thinking sadly of all that lovely money that James would have paid me. When in came another Saeed. An August Holtzinger, a slim, bald chap with glasses. Mr. Rivers, I don't want you to think I'm here under false pretenses. I'm really not much of an outdoorsman, and I'll probably be scared to death when I see a real dinosaur.
Well, most of us are frightened at first, but it doesn't do to speak of it.
Well, you see, I've always run a grocery store till my uncle died, and, I've got a great deal of money now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm building a new house. I'm engaged, you know, getting married, and, I'm determined to hang a dinosaur head over my fireplace or die in the attempt. A ceratopsian, I think. That's the one with the big horned head and the frill over the neck, isn't it?
Well, you want to think twice about that, you know. If you put a 7-foot triceratops head into a small living room, there's apt to be no room left for anything else.
I know it's ridiculous, but I'm determined to do something big for once. Since there's no more real big game hunting, I'm going to shoot a dinosaur and hang his head over my mantle. I'll never be happy otherwise.
The Roger and I decided to make it to the Middle Cretaceous. That's about 85 million years ago. It's the best period for dinosaur in Missouri. So we drove Holtzinger into the country to let him try the 6-0-0.
It's rather heavy.
Look, you look out. There's quite a kick.
Well, couldn't you fire it prone?
Oh, not a gun that big. There's not enough give. You'd break your shoulder. All right. Take the safety off.
Like this?
Take my hand. I'll help you up.
Thank you. I think I better try something smaller.
Well, he took a fancy to my Manchester 70, chambered for a 375 Magnum cartridge. That's a little light for elephant, and very definitely light for dinosaur, but we were in a hurry. And then, of course, just before we were ready to trek, James showed up and apologized for insulting me. He'd had a run-in with the girl, and he wanted to go along. And so we were off on safari. You all ready, gentlemen?
Why, yes, I suppose so.
Mr. Holtzinger, you've met my partner, the Raja of Janpur.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do?
Well, shall we get cracking? After you, Mr. Holtzinger. Mr. James.
Thank you.
Let's get going. All set.
We'll slam the hatch and off we go.
What happens?
Nothing till the force field is built up. There she goes.
What happened to the lights?
Well, there's no current while we're in transition.
I don't feel well.
There's usually a touch of vertigo. I shouldn't worry about it.
Look, where do you shoot for? I mean, with dinosaur. What is the best shot?
Well, you don't try for his brain, you know. They don't have any. Well, to be exact, they have a little bump about the size of a tennis ball on the top of their spines. And you're not likely to hit it when it's embedded in a 6-foot skull.
Try for the heart. They have big hearts, over 100 pounds. An exploding shell in the heart will slow them down, at least.
Oh, I see.
Why do we have to go so far for game? Why couldn't we just go back 50 years and shoot lions in Africa?
Well, the machine won't work more recently than 100,000 years ago.
Why?
Well, look, I'm no four-dimensional expert on the subject, but it has something to do with what they call time paradox. You know, if people could go back to recent times, they might do something to affect history or kill their own grandfather, you know. And there's also some kind of taboo about sending people back to the same time again. Paradoxes. Mustn't have them.
What would happen?
I'm not sure, but the university isn't taking chances. They've got about a billion years to cover. They won't run out of eras. Hello? Here we go. Oh, cheers, eh? Well, that's done it. April 24th. 85 million years B.C. Now then, careful. Keep the safety on your gun. And don't shoot unless I give the word.
Why? Why should we have to wait for you?
Because I'm responsible for everything you do. Especially if something goes wrong. I say, Roger, open the door, will you? In this period, the time chamber materializes on top of a rocky rise. At the west, you see the arm of the Kansas Sea that reaches across Missouri and the big swamp where the sauropods live. To the east, the land slopes up to a plateau. It's good for ceratopsians. But the finest thing about the Cretaceous is the climate. It's balmy like the South Sea Islands, and not so muggy as the Jurassic. Oh, he sent the time chamber back off and looked about. It was spring, with the dwarf magnolias in bloom all over. Down towards the Kansas Sea, cycads and willows grew, while the uplands were covered with screwpins and ginkgo. Yeah, well, I'm no ruddy poet, but I can appreciate a beautiful scene. Well, I was looking through the haze and sniffing the air.
I got him! I got him!
What the devil?
You see it? There it goes!
Confound it, you idiot! I told you not to shoot without word from me. And what happened?
An ornithomine. Wandered out of the copse. Mr. James gave him both barrels. Missed.
Now, look here, James. One of the biggest dangers on a safari is trigger-happy sahibs who get panicky. You're not to shoot unless you're told. You understand?
Who do you think you are to tell me when to shoot my own game?
Now, look here. Firstly, if you shoot off all your ammunition before the trip is over, your gun won't be available in case of a pinch. And secondly, if you empty both barrels, what would happen if a big theropod should charge before you could reload? And finally, it's not sporting to shoot everything in sight. Is that clear?
All right. All right.
Well, now then, first task is fresh meat. As I told you, Holsinger wanted a ceratopsian head. James insisted on a tyrannosaur. Then everybody would think that he'd shot the most dangerous game. Well, the fact is that tyrannosaur's overrated. But everybody's read about the tyrant lizard and... Well, he does have the biggest head of the theropods. Oh, and he'll snap you up if he gets the chance, no fear. Well, we started off searching for meat. The Raja and I put the sahibs in front. Yeah, we tell them it's so that they'll get the first shot, which is true, but... Another reason is that they're always tripping and falling with their guns cocked, and if the guy were in front, he'd get shot.
Boneheads.
Where?
See? Crouching over there. Feeding on those cycads. He's about the size of a man.
They look intelligent.
Well, not likely. That bulge on the head is solid bone. Now then, hold on there, James. You've had your shot for the day. Hold your fire until Holsinger shoots.
Yeah, sure, sure.
All right, go ahead, Mr. Holsinger.
Doesn't matter which one.
No, here. Try that one by the rock. There's a good clear shot. Well, take your safety off.
Oh.
Go ahead now.
Well?
Shh.
Ah, nuts. I've had enough of this.
James, don't...
I got him clean right through the heart. First shot. How's that?
I thought you were going to give Holsinger the first crack. It's his turn.
Well, I waited. Took so long, I thought he'd gotten buck fever.
Very well. But if this sort of thing happens once more, we leave you at camp the next time we go out. The next couple of days, we trekked around the neighborhood and then headed over to the sauropod swamp, over to the west. We were staked out along the edge of the lake, watching a big beggar out in the swamp waving his head about. And they're the big ones. It looks something like the brontosaur.
Can't we shoot him?
I wouldn't.
Why not?
Well, there's no point to it, and it's not sporting. Look, if you kill one in the water, he sinks and can't be recovered. And if you kill one on land, well, the only trophy is that little head on the top of that long neck. You can't bring that whole beast back because he weighs 30 tons or more.
That museum in New York got one.
Oh, yes. Well, they sent a party of 48 to the early Cretaceous with a 50-caliber machine gun. They spent two solid months hacking and sawing the carcass apart and hauling it to the time machine. I know the chap on the project, and he still has nightmares in which he smells decomposed dinosaur. And they also had to kill a dozen big sauropods who came in for the party. And then they had them lying around, too. They lost three men.
Reggie! Duck Bill!
Where are they?
Up there at the shoreline. Now, keep your voices down. You see? With a crest on the back of their heads.
Mr. Rivers, I've been thinking over what you said about those heads. If I could get one of those duck bills, I'd be satisfied. It'd look big enough over my mantle, wouldn't it?
I'm sure of it, old boy. Well, let's be off. Roger, you wait here with Mr. James. Shouldn't take us long. Holt and I crept along the shoreline, narrowing the range to the duck bills.
I think I can make the shot from here. I'll be ready in a minute. My shoe is loose.
He's getting away. I won't get a shot.
I'm afraid Mr. James has fired both barrels again.
James, that's the second time you spoiled my shots. I ought
Don't
to...
Don't be a fool. I couldn't let them wander into camp stamping everything flat.
There was no danger to that. You can see that the water is deep offshore. It's just that our trigger-happy Mr. James can't see any animal without shooting.
And if it did get close, all you have to do is to throw a stick of firewood at it. They're perfectly harmless.
Well, how was I to know?
I believe I mentioned it.
Well, what are we on this miserable trip for, except to shoot things?
There are certain rules, you know.
You call yourselves hunters. I'm the only one who was hitting anything.
Now, just a moment, old man. You're behaving like a confounded scut with more money than brains. I should never have brought you along.
Well, that's how you feel. Give me some food and I'll go back to the base by myself.
Now, don't be a bigger ass than you can help. That's quite impossible.
All right, I'll go alone. I wouldn't want to pollute your air with my presence.
Yeah, that's an attractive thought, Reggie, but we can't let him go. He'll get lost or starve. All right, I'll go after him.
We stumbled along for several more days. James on his good behavior for a change. And on the 1st of May, we broke camp and headed north to the hills. It was hot and sticky. And we were soon panting and sweating like horses when I picked up the smell of carrion and heard the thrumming of the flies. We found a huge ceratopsian lying dead in a little hollow on the edge of the copse. He must have weighed 6 or 8 tons alive.
Why couldn't I have gotten him before he died? That would have made a darn fine head.
Look, on your toes, chaps. The sauropod that's been at this carcass is probably nearby.
How do you know?
We see how the hide's been ripped off and the bones are scattered. Sauropods will hang around a carcass like this for weeks, gorging and then sleeping their meals off for days at a time.
What do we do?
Well, that's what we came after. Look, Roger, you take Mr. James through that way, and we'll parallel you 40 feet distant. Now keep your eyes open. It'll be hard to see in these woods unless you're right on top of him. We pushed through the edge of the copse, looking for the huge flesh-eater who'd been at the carcass. I could hear James and the Rajah pushing ahead on my right. We were separated by a gully when I heard a noise ahead on our left.
What is it?
I don't know. Take the safety off your gun.
Oh, there it is. It's one of those boneheads.
Ah, well, they're not dangerous at any rate. But be careful. That sauropod might still be around.
I've got him! Got him clean!
Well, he's done it again. He shot the bonehead.
I've got him!
Look out! Titanus Hall!
The Tyrannosaur heaved his head out of the shrubbery just in front of us. Look, the scientists can insist that Rex is bigger than Trionkes, but I'll swear that this Tyrannosaur was bigger than any Rex ever hatched. It must have stood 20 feet high and been 50 feet long. I could see its big, bright eye and 6-inch teeth. He'd been sleeping off his last meal, and James fired off both barrels over his head at the bonehead and woke the Tyrannosaur up.
Get back! Get back, you fool!
Gun's empty and Roger can't get a shot. It. There goes the beast in behind those ferns. Holtzinger!
Holtzinger! Come back! Your gun's too light for that beggar!
James came bolting back in a panic and blundered into the Rajah, sending both of them sprawling under the ferns. The Tyrannosaur came after them to snap them up. Holtzinger began to blaze away. He got off 3 shots through the beast's body with that little light gun. Tyrannosaur whirled around to see what was stinging it. The jaws came open, and the head swung around and down again. Holtzinger got off 1 more shot and tried to leap to one side. The Tyrannosaur continued its lunge and caught him in its jaws as he fell.
Reggie! Reggie!
Stand clear!
Hart! Hart's the only chance!
It's no use! There he goes!
Try a long shot!
Ah, no, missed him clean. Poor Holtzinger.
Well, that's the end. He stopped screaming. Did you notice?
Oh, yes. Well, I expect we'd best track the beast. He might be dying. We should try to recover Holtzinger's remains.
Yes, there's nothing else to do.
No, nothing. The bad shell all around. An hour later, we gave up and went back to the glade looking very dismal.
Where have you two been?
We were occupied. The late Mr. Holsinger. Remember?
You shouldn't have gone off and left me. None of those things might have come along. Isn't it bad enough to lose 100 through your stupidity?
What?
Sure, you put us in front of you, so if anybody gets eaten, it's one of us. That's...
You stinking little swine. If you hadn't been a first-class idiot and blown those two barrels again, this never would have happened. Holsinger died trying to save your worthless life. And I wish he'd failed.
Why, I ought to...
Now then, my lady buck, I'm glad you did that. It gives me a chance I've been waiting for. Now get up, and I'll be glad to finish off.
You won't finish anybody off. All right, put your hands up, both of you.
Put that gun away. Don't be an idiot.
I won't let anybody do that to me.
You can't get away with murder.
Why not? Won't be much left of you after you're hit with a 600 explosive shell. Nobody could prove anything. They can't hold you for a murder 85 million years old. The statute of limitations, you know.
Nice work, Roger, old chap.
Yes. Cretaceous rock. Doesn't quite have the balance of a cricket ball, but it's a bit harder. What?
Well, suppose we tie this chap up and take him back to camp. When the time transition chamber finally arrived, we fell over one another getting into it. We dumped James in a corner and threw the switches.
You two should have killed me back there.
Why? You don't have a particularly good head.
You wouldn't look at all well over a mantle.
You're going to laugh. But I'll get you someday.
Well, close quarters, isn't it?
Someday I'll find a way. I'll find a way and I'll get off scot-free, too.
My dear chap, if there was some way to do it, I'd have you charged with Holsinger's murder. Look, you'd best let well enough alone.
No, no, I'll kill you. Both of you. Somehow.
Cigarette, Roger.
Thanks.
When we came out in the present, we handed him his empty gun, and off he went. We paid everybody off, found that we were broke. But quite luckily, a steel manufacturer turned up who wanted a mastodon head for his den. Well, we were standing in the laboratory at the university waiting for the time chamber. The technician, he's a bookish chap, a theoretical, a temporal physicist, was watching his dials and scopes.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Rivers, you just missed him.
Hmm? Missed who?
That last client of yours, Mr. James.
Well, that's good luck. What was he doing here?
Oh, he told me quite a tale. Said he'd lost his wallet back there. Said it contained some very valuable papers.
Ah.
It must have been valuable. He paid the university fee of $5,000 for the use of the chamber. He's on his way back there now.
Back where?
Well, he told me to send him back a few minutes before you arrived the last time. Then he could see himself drop the wallet.
He's going to stand there and watch himself come out? Yeah, but, doesn't that create what you chaps call a paradox? What happens when a man tries to occupy the same time twice?
No, we don't know. It's never been tried before. Well, we tried to warn him, but he insisted.
Yes, I know. He's a headstrong chap. Still, you wouldn't think he'd chance it just for the sake of a wallet. Was he armed?
Yes. He had a 375 Express.
375? Well, that's odd. He knows it's too light for dinosaurs.
Yes, but not too light for a man. I say, Roger, you don't think Mr. James is lurking behind a bush back there until we show up again, planning to pot us as we step out?
That's impossible. We already did step out of the chamber and nothing happened.
Yeah, but that was before Mr. James was waiting with an express rifle cocked. Hey, Doctor?
Wait, you mean he's planning to murder the two of you?
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I don't suppose there's anything you could do to stop the process now.
No, it's too late. The chamber's in transition now. Look, hadn't you better get out of here before he kills you?
Well, there's no point in running. If Mr. James's theory is right, we've both been dead for 85 million years. We might as well wait and see what happens.
Transition point coming up.
Well, it's been quite a world up to this point. Hey, Roger?
Yes, quite.
Here it goes.
Reggie, are you all right?
Well, I seem to be. What happened?
The time chamber. It's back. We'd better get it open.
Good Lord, look at that.
Ghastly, isn't it? Where did it come from?
I'm not sure. But I rather think it came from the Middle Cretaceous era. Wasn't here a moment ago.
Ghastly mess. Looks as if every bone was pulverized and every blood vessel burst.
I dare say. But that's his gun, all right. It's James, there's no doubt of it. So, that's the story, Mr. Seligman. Of course, I don't understand the mathematics, but the idea's rather easy to grasp. Nobody had shot us when we first emerged on the 24th of April, 85 million BC. And so, of course, that couldn't be changed. The instant James started to do anything that would make a paradox, the space-time forces snapped him forward and ripped him to bits. Well, they know a good deal about that now, and there's a safety margin of 500 years between each trip. You can't have paradoxes, you know. It just isn't done. And you see, I'm a lot more careful now. I shouldn't have taken James when I knew what a spoiled, unstable sort he was. Or Holtzinger either, when I saw that he was too small to shoot a dinosaur gun. With a heavier gun, he'd probably have knocked the Tyrannosaur down and saved his own life. So, Mr. Seligman, that's why I won't take you to that period to hunt. I'm sorry, but you're just too light. You're not big enough to handle a gun for dinosaur.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the story of a man who develops a spaceship that travels so fast that its pilots vanish mysteriously into thin air. Read the Vaughn Shelton story, Point of Departure, in Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand now. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Gun for Dinosaur, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by L. Sprague DeCamp, patent consultant and one of our leading authors of science fiction. It was adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Alastair Duncan, Wendell Holmes, John Gibson, Donald Buca, Warren Parker, and Alan Hewitt. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
I hope you enjoyed that one. It was a recent find, and I was able to restore it. Always a fun process. It came from the series X-1, which was a half-hour science fiction radio drama series that broadcast from 1955 to 1958 on NBC Radio. Our story, A Gun for Dinosaur, has the distinction of being a nominee for the 1956 Hugo Award for Best Novelette. DeCamp revised the story in 1993 and wrote 8 more tales of its protagonist, time-traveling hunter Reginald Rivers. All 9 stories were then collected in the book, Rivers of Time, and as I mentioned earlier, it is available on Audible for free for just trying out their service. There you have podcast for this time. I want to thank Wilford Fuller, J.J. S. Vent, and Alexandra Becker for being part of the show today. All good stuff. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find an amazing number of links that should fit every need. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it. And please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. This is how podcasts grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.